We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
From Learfield, welcome to Flight Report, the latest news from EWU Athletics spanning all sports, events, and key information. Fly with us. Now, here is your host, the voice of the Eagles, Larry Weir.
Welcome to another edition of Flight Report. It's where we talk about Eastern Washington University athletics. Each week, I'll talk to players, coaches, administrators, maybe even former players. And this week, we are going to talk to head coach Aaron Best from the Eagle football team as they prepare for UC Davis in the FCS quarterfinals this Saturday. And we will also hear from two players in the postgame show last week. First off, I have to apologize because this particular podcast should have been out on Tuesday, but I thought I was going to get another guest for the show. And I thought that was going to be able to be recorded on Wednesday. But as it ended up, I couldn't get the individual that I was looking for. And so we're releasing the podcast on Thursday when what I have could have easily been released on Tuesday. So I apologize for being a couple of days late with that. On the coaches show, or after the coaches show Monday night, an Eagle booster, Cal Clausen, came up to me and said, "I want to donate 100 tickets for the military, whether it's veterans or active duty, I wasn't sure which, but I want to do that, and I want to challenge other business owners to meet that or beat it." And so we're putting that out here, and this is one reason why this should have been released on Tuesday, because it gives people more time to get things done rather than roughly 24 hours, depending on when you're hearing this particular podcast. So indeed, that did happen, or at least somebody donated. It may have been someone else beside Cal who made this donation. But Leslie Moat tweeted out on Wednesday that that donation did happen, gave contact information on social media, et cetera, for people who may want those tickets to pick them up. So that's a great gesture, and I hope we get some more gestures like that, whether it's for active duty or veterans, whether it's for students, whether it's for youth, whatever it may be, because every little bit helps toward the bottom line. Eastern has to pay money in order to be able to host these games. The second round dollar figure, according to a sheet that I found from the NCAA, says that the second round guarantees were $40,000. So Eastern had to guarantee $40,000 basically in ticket revenue to the NCAA in order to be able to host this game. And if they didn't make $40,000 in ticket revenue, then they had to pay it anyway out of the school coffers. So the figure that I have for the quarterfinal round is $50,000. So it goes up by $10,000. Now, you know, I think we did probably do better than $40,000 in ticket sales, but did we do $50,000 in ticket sales? Probably, but still, we need to do that again, and you're going to have fewer students involved in all likelihood, and those tickets are paid for by the university. So somebody has to, the students aren't getting free admission. It doesn't cost them anything, but somebody else has to pay, whether it's an individual, a business, or the university itself. So it would be really good if we could maybe match what Cal did amongst listeners of this podcast. If you're going to the game, maybe buy an additional ticket or two tickets or five tickets or 10 tickets or whatever it is you may be able to afford to allow, whether it's military, whether it's students, whatever, donate a ticket or more. And if we could get another 100 or another 200 tickets in addition to what Cal did, now you've got, you know, $2,400, $3,600, $4,800 worth of tickets. You've got a $50,000 guarantee that you have to hit. So, A, you get an extra $200, $300, $400 in the seats, plus you get an extra $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 that add to that bottom line that helps the university and make sure that the university can meet its requirements that they have to pay the NCAA to host this game. And that doesn't include all the other money that Eastern has to have in order to host a game, whether it's, you know, paying the electricity bill or paying sewer and water with all the flushing of toilets and whatnot, or paying ticket takers, security, extra staff members to do game day operations, game clock, play clock, public address, et cetera, et cetera. All these things, the chain gang, all these people have to be paid. It costs thousands of dollars to run a regular home game besides what they're having to pay the NCAA. So there's a lot of money that is needed, and any money that we can get through ticket sales is a boon to the university. So I encourage you to do that. If you can't meet Cal's or beat Cal's donation, then maybe you can make a small donation of yourself and get an extra ticket or two, and if we get enough of those tickets, maybe between 50 or 75 or 25 or 10 of us, we can meet Cal's and beat Cal's donation. So thanks to Cal, and thanks to anybody who donates tickets so others can see this ball game live and in person on Saturday, because we need butts in seats. The team needs butts in seats. They need the support, and they deserve the support. They've had a tremendous season, and you'll be able to hear what the players had to say, two of them, after the ball game on Saturday against Nicholls State, as well as Coach Aaron Best here in just a moment or two. The semifinals, by the way, would be held either Friday or Saturday. There'll be a game Friday night. There'll be a game Saturday night next week. If the Eagles were to win this week, they would play one of those two dates. And again, if Maine beats Weber State in a ball game that'll be played on Friday night, you can watch it on ESPN2, then if Maine wins that game, then either UC Davis or Eastern would host the semifinal game. And so now you've got to put that $60,000 out there for the semifinal game, which means the bar just went up a little bit more. And then all students, except for those who live locally, will be off campus at that point in time, so we may not have quite as much of a need there, but we still have the need to get people into the seats. So keep that in mind. The university does have to pay for the home games, and we do need the ticket revenue that is able to match the guarantee that we have to give in order to be able to host that game. So I thought that was interesting. I hadn't known the dollar figures. I frankly thought they'd be a little bit higher. I thought it would be maybe $40,000 for the first round, maybe $55,000 for the second round, $70,000 or $75,000 for the quarters, and maybe $90,000 for the semis. So this is a little more reasonable than maybe I thought it would be initially. On the field, it's going to be difficult against this UC Davis team, because they probably want some retribution, and it's not going to be the same game that it was back on the 10th of November. For starters, Eastern doesn't have complete health in their secondary. Mitch Fedig did a fantastic job against Keelan Doss and others in that ballgame. Fedig's out for the year. Keenan Williams, an outstanding defensive end for the Eagles, put a lot of pressure on Jake Mayer, their quarterback. You will hear from Aaron Best in this interview what Keenan's situation is for the remainder of 2018. No Kurt Calhoun, although I don't think he played in that game anyway. He was already injured and out. But Eastern is without some starters. Last week they were without Tyson Prunty and Cole Karstetter. We don't know whether we're going to see these guys on Saturday. We may not. And so both those guys were key in the defense against Davis as well. So this isn't going to be the same Eastern team, personnel-wise, that played at UC Davis. Now, Eastern has done a very good job defensively, regardless who's been on the field this year. They've been able to basically put whoever into the ballgame, and that person has been able to play as well as the person that they replaced. So that's been a key thing this year for the Eagles, but depth is dwindling. We only saw three defensive ends basically rotating on Saturday of last week. We saw three linebackers rotating in and out, and basically six, maybe seven guys in the secondary were rotating in and out. So some depth has been lost with the injuries that the Eagles have had at this point this season. So let's hear a little bit about this. Let's go back and talk about the Nicholls State game, and let's look forward to UC Davis. Here is Eagle head coach Aaron Best on this week's Flight Report. Coach Best, great win in the playoffs against Nicholls State. It was a ball game that really wasn't going your way through much of the first half, but then you got a big momentum swing.
We did. Didn't do a ton of great things offensively. Defense was stout enough in the first half, only the 14 points and the field goal attempt late in the said quarter, which we huge Kendrick Johnson, Johnny on the spot, Zuzi Webster almost picked it up. Glad he didn't, because Kendrick did, and it went for six. But yeah, we were, I wouldn't say we were out of sync, Larry. We just had an interception early. We just weren't real smooth operators in that first half offensively. But still, you know, you're talking about 11 points down going into that field goal, but that was a hell of a play. Got us back to within four with them getting the ball to start the third quarter. So games are 60 minutes, not 30 minutes. We regrouped at halftime, simplified a few things on defense, and just played ball. That was the message at halftime. Just play football. Don't think, be proactive, not reactive, and go let it rip for 30 minutes.
In the end, you outscored them 32-7 in the second half. So how big was that field goal? Was it, if you were down 14-3 or 17-3 versus 14-10, you know, what would be the difference there?
We still had work to do, regardless of the outcome of that field goal return for a touchdown. But certainly momentum is in your favor, where all of a sudden that those points in that moment were more than we scored the entire first half on offense. So that is a huge boost. You had four possessions in the first half, two empty, an interception and a field goal. One of those empty possessions was a turnover in the red zone. So we had our chances. It wasn't like it was three and out, three and out, three and out. But that was huge, huge to get it within 4 points. And then again, you know, we've conditioned ourselves in the offseason to be at this point in third quarters and fourth quarters to be able to lean on people. And just because it's not going good early doesn't mean it can't be going good late. And so this year we've kind of been a first half team sometimes been a second half team sometimes. But I know this, we played a complete ball game in that second half in all three phases.
So they give up 94 yards a game on the ground. You get 230, 240, whatever it was. What was the secret there? What was the story?
No secret. Attacked some certain areas that we thought we could attack. It didn't go great early, just like anything. But a lot of times run games get 2 and 3 or 4 and 5, and then they end up being 22 and 23, 24 and 25 as you wear on teams. I think the weather, the environment allowed us to that crisp environment, if you will, allowed us to play in the elements we practice in. I think it's advantage Eastern, and I think those guys absolutely ran hard. Sam McPherson ran like a man-child out there. He was hitting holes, just re-watching it. There were certain things that he saw that you didn't even see from the sidelines that he saw and felt during the game. And Eric Berrier is another guy on the ground that's going to get you 50, 60, 70 on the ground at times. And so we'll try to take advantage of certain situations, but we knew that 94 yards was going to be not what we were going to be rushing for in that game. And we had a heck of a day in the run department. Tight ends blocking downfield. Too many penalties. That was our biggest blunder all day long. Too many penalties. So we've got to regroup, reteach, rethink how we're going about things, because 10 penalties, and they declined, it seemed like four or five more for 107 yards is not okay, especially this time of year.
All right, so you may resist this, but you're turning a little bit more into your old head coach here with your vocabulary from time to time. I see a tweet today saying the factotum with Sam McPherson being the offensive player of the week. So I didn't know what that was. I'm not a college graduate, so I had to look it up on the computer, and it says the factotum is an employee who does everything. Well, Sam did that. He ran the ball, he caught the ball, and he threw the ball.
He did, and that wasn't from my college degree. That was a Water Wordsworth class I took in high school to prep me for the SAT. Mrs. Johnson, and that was my favorite word. I bought an unabridged Webster's dictionary. It was about 6 inches thick, and that's what we used for one semester to find root words, and it was the toughest class I've ever taken. But it's also taught me more than I ever taught or got taught ever in a class, including college. So I was a high school class. That was my 11th grade year. And factotum, Jack or Jill of all trades. So that's what I use today.
But he did a great job. And again, he we've lost some seniors this year. Gubrud, Calhoun, Fettig, among those who have had their career ended by injuries. Sam's a guy that has had his career maybe derailed by injury from time to time, so it's great to see a senior be able to come back and play the way he has this year.
Absolutely, and I'd add another guy in his boat, Roldan Alcabendez. You know, derailed, and all of a sudden he's playing lights out, played lights out from start to finish, and so it's great to see those guys. I guess rewarded is a right. I don't like the word deserve. They've earned this opportunity, and the brighter the lights, the better they are. And with that, you talk about seniors' career ending. It's unfortunate Keenan Williams will no longer be with us. He was hit with a knee injury against Portland State, and we got the news back a couple of days prior to Nicholls State game. So his career is now done with Eastern in pads, and so heart goes out to him as well. So it, unfortunately, those are the bad news of this profession, this business. It's part of the game, unfortunately. But we keep our chin down, our eyes up, and build what we have and continue on the next. So it's unfortunate news that we got late last week.
You were without five starters on the defensive side of the ball, plus Caleb Davis, who is a backup nose guard, plus Trevor Davis in the linebacking unit, plus three other guys that haven't even played for you this year with Anthony Gurley, Jack Sindelbach, and Connor Bauman. How does this defense keep continuing, even though you lose pieces, to play great ball?
Well, two things come to mind. One of them is the recruiting efforts by this entire staff, the ones we have here and the ones prior to the old staff, getting competitive depth. That's the number one thing that goes. You have to have those players to allow the place to be made. But then I think you got to credit Jeff Schmitty and the crew. They're just the belief in the system, not necessarily in the players, but in the system, that they believe in the system enough to where if next man up is called, whether it's Mr. Patterson, Mr. Osua, or anybody else at the linebacker core, where I never would have guessed those guys would have suited up for a playoff game, that's what we do. That's who we are. And it's a credit to those old guys getting them ready from a translation standpoint. Sometimes we speak a different language as coaches. It's nice to have seniors translate what we're trying to say to those guys. But Jeff Schmitty and his staff have done a great job. And we're on a roll. We'll continue the roll. And as long as we have enough bodies to be able to play on Saturdays, we always have a chance.
All right, round two now with the UC Davis Aggies. You just played them a month ago or less. So how difficult is it to play against an opponent? I can't remember if we've done this in any of the playoff rounds where we're playing a team for the second time in a year.
I don't remember any either. My first taste of this was in the CFL, where a lot of times on Labor Day you play your rival on Monday and come back on that Friday and play them again. We'll dissect them just like we did the first time in terms of from a studying standpoint. We won't take anything for granted. We'll prepare as if this is a new team and of players that we don't know, even though we have some knowledge of them prior to. So we don't want to take this or prepare for this any differently, just like a bye week. We don't prepare for them for 2 weeks, so we don't want to prepare for this for 2 days because we've already played them before. But it is interesting. It's different, and it's the way the bracket was set. And, you know, the bracket's chalk right now as far as 1 through 8 getting through. And so we'll put our best foot forward, and we welcome all the fans, our home fans and their fans to change. Should be a good one. And it's always hard to beat a team twice. You know that. It's even harder to beat someone 3 times, I've been told. But so we'll get our best shot facing one of the best offenses in the league, one of the best, you know, 2 best players in the league and in the country. And so we'll have our work cut out for us. We got to be all hands on deck on both sides of the ball and in special teams to make this thing happen on Saturday.
Might be a hard question for you to answer, but do you anticipate them having a little motivation coming back up here, being as how, you know, they lost here a month ago, they want to redeem themselves a little bit?
Well, I mean, I think anytime you lose, anytime you get a chance to go back to where you maybe had that loss and then in the playoffs, so absolutely there'll be added motivation. But, you know, motivation only goes so far. That'll get you to the game. And then once the game goes on, I don't know that motivation during the game is going to be brought from a month ago. I think at that point, you play, you call what's played, you tackle, you throw, you block, you run, you catch, you score. It all becomes fundamental football after the first kickoff.
You guys dominated the second half of the ball game against Davis. So does that make a quick start in this game something where, you know, maybe they say, oh, here we go again?
You'd love to start fast and finish strong, much like our motto a few years ago. But at the end of the day, I think, Larry, everybody out there knows at this time of year when you're playing after Thanksgiving, it's about a matter of scoring more points. So whether you score a ton in the first quarter and don't score any the next three, it's a matter of when those 4 zeros hit at the end of the game, do you score more? There's no such thing, especially in the postseason, as an ugly victory or a beautiful loss. There's no such thing. You win in advance or you lose and go home. And so we're one of 8 fortunate teams at this point. We envisioned this prior to this moment. And I love the fact that that we got a lot of guys playing a lot of different positions, lining up to a lot of different faces that we had 11, 12, 13 weeks ago. That's a beautiful thing. Getting a ton of experience, and we get to hopefully hold serve at home.
Every game's a championship game at this point, right? You were a champion of a second-round game last week. Now you're trying to be a champion of a third-round game this week.
Absolutely. You know, you talk about San Diego facing Nichols, both league champions, and then Nichols and us, both league champions, and then us and now Davis, both league champions. And so when you get to this stage, everybody's a champion, you know. And the field's, you know, we talked about it, has, you know, 10 autos, and then they're filtered a lot of other teams that are close to championship caliber, but any of those 24 teams that gets in the field has a chance. That's what I do know. It's what you do after you get the chance for that opportunity and what you make of it. And so, you can't sleep on anybody, home or away. And again, you got 60 minutes to do it. And you know, whether it's home field advantage or not, you get 60 minutes to prove your mettle.
Coach, thanks for the time. Good luck Saturday.
Thanks, Larry. Appreciate it.
That's Eagle head coach Aaron Best. Going back to last week's game, the Eagles trailed 14-3 just before the half. Nichols State lined up to try a field goal that would give them a 17-3 lead at the intermission. But if they get the kickoff, they at least have a 14-3 lead plus the ball in the second half of play. But instead, what happens? The Eagles block the kick. Dylan Ledbetter with his third of the year. Zuzi Webster tries to handle it, can't do it. It bounces forward. Grabbed by Kedrick Johnson, he returns it 55 yards for the touchdown. Momentum flip. We had that in UC Davis game back on the 10th of November. Momentum flip in the early part of the second half. The Eagles led it 21-17. UC Davis scored at the end of the half to cut it to 4, and they had the ball to start the second half of play. But Webster, the pick 6 in that ball game. Momentum flip. Eastern takes a 2-score lead, and they go on to a 59-20 win. So, momentum flip. We'll hear from Kedrick Johnson in the postgame interviews with Paul Sorensen, and also you will talk to Sam McPherson. I mentioned in the interview with Coach Best the word factotum, the employee who does everything, basically. Well, McPherson had over 100 yards rushing in the ball game, had another 30 yards plus receiving, another 30 yards plus passing. He totaled about 200 yards of offense in the game. So here's Paul's postgame interviews with Sam McPherson and the guy that returned the block field goal for the touchdown, Kedrick Johnson.
It's always great when you can come back into the postseason. You live to play another day. And you guys, your mantra, Sam McPherson, has been basically to go one more week. It's to leave no doubt after what happened last year. You guys came out, and it looked kind of ugly early. Let's be honest. The Colonels were doing a nice job. They were doing some things. They were kind of limiting what you could do running the ball. And then all of a sudden, there's a guy named Kedrick Johnson got a little nice bounce, you know, picked that ball up and housed that that blocked field goal. That was a different football team in the second half. Tell us a little bit, Sam, about what happened in the second half that didn't really happen in the first.
Well, first off, it started with that blocked field goal. Dylan Ledbetter got a hand on it, and Kedrick picked it up and scored. That changed it completely. I mean, that was a game-changing play, and we carried off of that, and it gave us a spark, and we left no doubt after that, so it was good.
I was really proud of you because you had two touchdowns today, and nobody tackled you inside the five on a long run. 20 carries, 137 yards, two scores. You also had a double pass that was awesome and threw a nice ball down to Boston for 32 yards. That kind of messed up your stats, though, because this year you're 2-for-2 with no touchdowns. Before that, you were 3-for-3 with three touchdowns. So, but tell us what you saw in that play, and how much fun is that when you can put the football in your hand and pass it downfield?
It's so much fun. I was a baseball player, so I love throwing the ball around. But, yeah, I mean, I was just happy to get that. I was happy they called it off a turnover. They probably weren't expecting that, and that was perfect. I saw the safety come over the top, threw a good ball to Boston. He made a great catch on it. I wish we would have kept him in bounds just a little bit more for that touchdown. But, hey, it all works.
You know Bodie Reed will coach you up on throwing it more towards the number and not towards the sidelines. But overall, the running game seemed to wear down this defense a little bit. And as the game went on, your offense really kind of got in sync. What happened along those lines? Because you guys started to gash them pretty good in the second half.
Yeah, I mean, our offensive line in the second half opened up some great holes. That's why we were all able to hit them. They were good defense, though. They were very strong, very, very fast up front. I think we wore them down. I think that's what got to them. We do this thing called run to win, where we conditioned during practice. I think that really got to them. I think we were the better winded team on the field today.
You guys get to take on the winner. The game in progress right now between Davis and Northern Iowa. It doesn't matter who wins. They're going to have to come to roost. How important is to hold serve here in Cheney during the playoffs? Have a chance if you can win next week, advance to the semis.
It's so important. Playing in front of these fans is awesome. I mean, they had a great showing today. I know school was almost out, so some people might go home, but we're hoping everyone stays around for us. And yeah, our fans are awesome. And it's so important to play on the red. And to be able to play on the red is obviously a special thing. You don't get to play on red turf that often. And as long as we can go, that's awesome.
Well, the Bothell community is awfully darn proud of you, and so is the Eagle community, and so is this guy up in the broadcast booth. It's been an absolute blast to watch you play, and hopefully you can go another three games and get back to Frisco and win the Natty. And that's the goal of this football team, and I think it's within your sight.
Yep, absolutely. Leave no doubt. That's what we need to do.
Sam McPherson, thank you.
Thank you.
With a very happy Kendrick Johnson, the young sophomore, got your first start tonight. Unfortunately, Carstetter had a hand issue in the Portland State game, wasn't able to go, but you had to step up as a sophomore, the young man out of Vancouver, the area, and just, I know that's kind of a tough deal because there's a lot of mental stuff that comes into play at nickel. You've got to understand the run fits. You've got to understand pass situations down and distance. For me, it looked like as the game went on, you got better. What did you see out there tonight?
I just had to stick to my reads and stick to what I know and play as I'm coached and, you know, play confident. And that's what really helped me through the game, was just staying confident, staying controlled, and, you know, playing with my teammates.
You had your first sack, first tackle for loss, so seven tackles on the day. All that stuff is nice, but let's talk about the touchdown. You didn't jockey as much as Kettner Cup did. He took 29 minutes to score, but you did a great job, and that was a huge turning point in my eyes when Ledbetter seems to block everything. He got in there, blocked it. Then you saw that ball rolling around. Tell us what happens when you picked it up and how much fun that was to look down and see an open field.
Well, first thing I was thinking was, oh crap, the ball's in my hands. And then I just, you know, we practice that week after week, you know, scoop and score when plays like that happen. And, you know, I couldn't have done it without the D-line and always getting a huge push on that and always doing their job and working like really hard. And then, you know, I just saw an opportunity and I took it and, you know, I stick to what I knew. We practiced it and I stayed calm and just, you know, I guess did what I had to do, I guess.
Very interesting, because the defense has had five scores this year. You've had three fumble recoveries, I think four fumble recoveries for scores, you know, and then a blocked field goal for a score. So defense and special teams have done a nice job of making plays. Is that something that Coach Schmetting really talks about, and your position coaches harp on, to be in a position to make big plays when opportunity arises?
Yes, it's one of the things we always talk about is takeaways. And, you know, when everybody's flying around, being physical and playing as hard as they can, those things just come. When everybody does what they're supposed to do and we play together and we play like savages, like we always break on, that's what comes out of it.
I know Coach Schmed's going to have a couple of coaching points for you. I saw where he kind of got upfield and allowed either the quarterback or running back to slide up underneath that. He'll talk about and coach you up. There'll be some things that you can learn on, but for your first start, my goodness, what an impact you made out there on a defense that really is kind of hurting at the nickel and safety position. So the next guy up, as Aaron Best always talks about, the EKG kind of guy, you were that guy today. How much fun was it to be a part of that game?
It was a lot of fun, and one of the things that our little motto for the week was attack the opportunity. And I just, when I get the opportunity, I just, you know, had to do as I'm coached and just shoot.
That's all right. Yeah. You're doing a great job, dude. And I'm really proud of you. And I'll tell you, what a fantastic first start, you know, for you and your career. And there's going to be a lot in front of you. Only a sophomore. You're going to get nothing but better. But your first start, and you house one. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Get you an update on a couple of other sports here. The men's and women's indoor track and field teams held their first meet of the winter season, and it's their annual Candy Cane Invitational. It's the 11th annual Candy Cane Invitational, and it's basically become a dual meet between Eastern Washington and Montana. The Eagle men won their dual meet. The women lost to Montana last weekend, but there's some great performances. Keyshawn McGee won both the long jump and triple jump. And in the early part of the season, he is number one right now in the NCAA nationally in the triple jump and number two in the long jump. It went over 51 feet in the triple jump, over 24 feet in the long jump, and he was the Big Sky Conference Field Athlete of the Week for his performance against Montana. So the Eagle indoor track and field season is underway. They will get back into action again. I think it's the 12th of January at the University of Idaho in their indoor meet there inside the Kibbe Dome. The men's basketball team have had it's been finals week, if you didn't know, in Cheney. So the men's basketball team took this week off. They will head on Friday to Fargo, and they will play at North Dakota State on Saturday afternoon. Again, we have an overlap between football and basketball on the radio, so the basketball game will be on FM News Radio 100.7 KXLY 920, and that game will start at 4:30. With tip-off at 5 on Saturday. The football game will be on 700 ESPN 105.3 FM with a noon airtime and a 1 o'clock kickoff. So our post-game show should end pretty close to the time of the basketball game should start, so you'll be able to go from 700 to 920, or if you're listening on the FM dial, from 105.3 to 100.7 FM to listen football to basketball, and you shouldn't miss very much action, I wouldn't think, on Saturday, depending on the length of the ball game that Eastern plays. And then the women will be in action on Friday at Boise State. And then they go to Hawaii for that next week, while the Eagle men will go to Northern California and play University of San Francisco and Stanford. So that's what's going on with the other sports around Eastern Athletics. You can listen to the Flight Report in many different ways. You can go to GoEags.com and click on the Fan Zone, then on Flight Report with Larry Weir and listen from there. If you're a regular podcast consumer, you can subscribe or just listen through most of the major podcast sites like iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, CastBox, Radio Public, Pocket Casts, and iHeartRadio. Thanks again to football coach Aaron Best for his time this week. Hope you enjoyed the postgame player interviews. Thanks to Paul Sorensen for gathering that. Again, the third-ranked Eagle football team in the FCS quarterfinals against UC Davis, Saturday at 1 o'clock. Tickets are available. Go to GoEags.com, click on the tickets link there, get all the information you need. We hope to have you there in the seats. If you can't be there, listen to the radio. It's on ESPN3. But listen to the radio, 700 ESPN, 105.3 FM, noon pregame, 1 o'clock game time. We'll talk to players DeJonte Hayes and Andrew Boston in the pregame, plus defensive coordinator Jeff Schmetting. J.C. Sherritt is scheduled to join us in our Where Are They Now segment. Of course, he's in Edmonton. How much longer will he be playing We'll find out what's he doing in the offseason, if he's preparing for next year or not preparing for next year, et cetera, et cetera. We'll hear from JC. You'll hear from Aaron Best. And a whole lot more coming up in the pregame show on Saturday. Thanks for listening to this week's Flight Report. I'm Larry Weir.
You've been listening to Flight Report, the latest news from EWU Athletics, spanning all sports, events, and key information. Fly with us. The preceding has been a Learfield presentation.